Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
And welcome into Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Getting closer and closer to closing out the year here in 2020. Fellas, what's going on? Joe Rex Road, how we doing?
Good. Looking forward to a new year. I guess probably not going to snap our fingers, everything be all different, but still, we can at least complain about 2021 then, you know?
Just add a little different spice to it. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah.
We have less than 48 hours left in this just awful year of 2020.
Yeah, we did.
Less than 48 hours left.
It feels good.
It sounds good.
Yeah.
It does sound good.
Like you said, Joe, I'm not sure that everything's just going to magically start to get better in 2021, but there's at least that thought still in your head that it could.
You see, we're seeing the light here, and it's in 2021, so it sounds way better.
Did you catch any bowl game action last night, Joe?
I was writing. Writing furiously about Tennessee basketball. I did not watch 1 second. I had Twitter up, so it's terrible that De'Aaron King got hurt.
Yeah.
That's awful. So I was following along on Twitter, but I didn't watch it.
I didn't watch a whole lot either. I just saw the run by the Texas running back where Colorado had him in the backfield approximately 9 different times, and then he ends up in the end zone. That was about all the action I saw last night. The bowl games are just not having the same pop to me this year.
You know what? I saw that highlight, and that was an awesome run.
It was. It was great.
Yeah, it's weird. And normally, I don't know about, like, it's not as good as, you know, the NCAA tournament bracket. But usually, in most years, I'm in a bowl pool or, you know, like a confidence pool where you pick, and I like those. Those are fun. And I didn't even, like, get sent one this year by the people that usually do it. So it's
probably a good thing. Like, you know, 70% of the bowl game's not happening. Probably a good thing.
I don't think anyone wanted to be a commissioner of a college football bowl pool because that would just be a headache.
Yeah.
Right.
With all scratch the cancellations. Scratch this one. All right. Now this guy has 15 confidence points on Ole Miss against Indiana instead of 16 because we're going to have to bring everything down. Yeah. No one wants to be that guy.
Look, we've had to deal with too many headaches this year. That's just another one. Yeah, we can't do that.
Exactly.
I will say that I'm kind of excited about Florida, Oklahoma today.
Yeah.
I mean, as bowl games go, that's a pretty intriguing matchup. And I don't see too many. I certainly don't see Oklahoma getting too many stops.
Well, let me ask you this.
We'll see if they can hang.
If Florida loses the game, like,
God, that's crazy.
Is Dan Mullen going to blame the loss on, like, his show costs? Is there going to be some sort of excuse he comes up with if they lose this game?
Or the cowboy hat he wore the other day at his presser. Yeah. I don't know if you guys read
the – what a nerd.
Yeah, he's something else. I don't know if you guys read the Michael Rosenberg Sports Illustrated piece on the pandemic in college sports, but it was really good. It laid everything out, and there's a real nice section on Dan Mullen in there. I mean, he's had a heck of a year.
Yeah.
That's one way to put it.
2020, the year of Dan Mullen.
Hey, about 4 or 5 weeks ago, everything was going pretty well for Dan Mullen. Then fell off the rails a little bit.
Then the shoe dropped?
Yeah.
On Florida season?
Yeah, it did. Ugh. Nicely done, Porth. That was good. Way to go. Well, Joey had David Poyle on the show yesterday, and it was interesting to hear him talk about a lot of things yesterday. If you missed that on our show yesterday, you can find it on Apple and on Spotify on our podcast. Great interview with David Poyle. Got into Eli Tolvanen, Philip Tomasino, what the future of this team could look like. But, Joe, to me, what it really all boils down to and how successful this Predators team can be as they're heading into training camp here in the next few days and as the season gets rolling here in the next few weeks It's going to come down to the four guys we spend a lot of time talking about, and that is Ryan Johansson, Philip Forsberg, Victor Arvidsson, and Matt Duchene. You know, we've talked about it a ton. They were not good enough last year. We had Forsberg on a couple weeks ago, and that's what he said. He said, you know, those four guys were not good enough, and it's going to take a much better effort from those guys this year and much better production from those guys this year to make a difference. Here's what David Poile had to say yesterday about the production of his top four forwards.
If I was a betting man, which I'm not, I would bet that the Yolfa line with these three guys, if John chooses to play them together, will be one of the better lines in the National Hockey League. And, you know, bottom line, that's what we need. I mean, if they are live up to their capabilities, they will pull along and make our second line better, and our second line will make our third line better. That's just how it works. I mean, the cliche for today is that, you know, if your best players are your best players in the game, you get a chance to win every night. And, you know, honestly, last year that was not always the case. So I think the challenge is there to Philip Forsberg and to Joey Arvies and Duchene, for example, as you call them, our top four forwards. I think they all know that. They all know their impact on our team and what their play means to us. So,
Joe, as you hear David Poile talk about those four guys specifically and you forecast what this team looks like heading into this season, if you had to identify one of those four players that has the most pressure on them heading into this year, which one would you go with?
Well, I think you could make a case. You could make a case for all of them. I think you could make probably a better case for two of them. But I'm going to go with Matt Duchene. And the reason I say that is, you know, for one, I mean, even just coming off the postseason, you know, obviously the offsides, but even the way he reacted to the loss, I just don't think he endeared himself to Predators fans at the end there. He didn't have the year, you know, people were hoping for, but I think the pressure's higher on him because I think those other three guys should feel good about being together. You know, like I think if those other three guys are healthy and the way Johansson played in the postseason, you know, I think that there's a certain amount of confidence that they should all have that collectively they're going to be good together, you know. But Duchene, I mean, we don't know exactly how that's going to work for him, but we know that he's going to be expected to carry the load and bring that second line to a certain level of play. So I think it's him. I think it's him because of last year, but also because, you know, he doesn't have that support that those guys have with each other. And I think it's going to be more difficult for him potentially.
Yeah, like I'm with you. I think this could go really any way you want to take it with this conversation. I think there's a fair bit of pressure on all of them. Duchene certainly in that mix. I think you can make a really good argument for Forsberg as well, because I still think there's another level that he needs to get to. And obviously, you know, we talk about 40 goals all the time. That's probably not going to be the case this year in a 56-game schedule. If he puts up 40 and 56, there's no pressure on that guy anymore. He's doing what he needs to do. I mean, that's not going to happen.
What's the 40-goal equivalent in a 56-game season, like 25?
Yeah, 26, 27, somewhere around there, I guess. Yeah,
okay. Yeah. I can figure this out.
Yeah, Joe, you work on the math. We don't do that here on the show. But, I mean, look, I think there's another level for him to get to. But to me, this answer really begins and ends with Ryan Johansson. I mean, I think we've seen enough body of work at this point to know what kind of a player Ryan Johansson is, especially when it comes down to the postseason. I mean, he can be dynamic. He can change the game. I thought in the series against Arizona, I mean, he was dominant again. He played really well. And when he's engaged, when he's going at that level, he's a really, really good player. I mean, he's not ever going to be the guy that puts up, you know, 75, 80 points in a normal 82-game season. I think we realize that at this point. But what I can't have happen if you're the Predators is for him to just kind of coast through the regular season again. I thought last year he was just kind of there for the most part. He wasn't making game-changing plays, wasn't good enough in the regular season. And then you see what he's capable of doing in the playoffs, and you're like, okay, well, where is this for most of the year? that can't happen this year. This it's got to be from the jump. And you talked about, just the comments Poyle made yesterday of, training camp's going to be like basically less than 2 weeks. You got to get rolling right away. You got to get in there. You got to get your lines figured out. You can't wait on guys to get going this season. And it's got to be right from the jump. I think Ryan Johansson's got a lot of pressure on him. And quite frankly, and you can make the same case with Duchesne as well, I guess. But if it happens kind of similar to how it went last season and it's just very uninspiring and things don't go well in the regular season and the production's not there on a consistent basis from Ryan Johansson, you're David Poyle and this staff at the end of this season, you got to think about doing something and making a change. So I think there is a great amount of pressure on Ryan Johansson this year. I really do.
He was my number two. And I agree with everything you said there. I feel like he should have confidence and should build on that. Doesn't mean he will, but there's no reason for him not to, because like you said, we saw what he can do in the postseason. And I think that, frankly, I think that postseason, I think what you just said, maybe that's much more of a discussion this offseason.
Yeah.
If he doesn't do what he did in the bubble. I mean, and maybe things would look a lot different right now overall, if not for that. If David Poyle had really looked to move him and was able to do it. He's we know what he can do. And again, I do think there's a little bit of an excuse when you're talking about moving people around and all that and other people being hurt a little bit, but he's still a guy who can on his own be much more of a difference maker, as we saw in the postseason, as we've seen before.
So let me play devil's advocate real quick on this and bring up the case for Philip Forsberg to have the most pressure, because he has the most pressure to score goals.
Uh-huh.
He's really the only pure goal scorer on this team, and everyone knows that he's capable of another level, and we haven't seen that next level on a consistent basis for a full season in the last 4 years. So I think you can make a case for Philip Forsberg having the most pressure on him, because he's the primary guy to put the puck in the back of the net. I mean, Victor Arvidsson as well on that top line, those two guys. But Forsberg is the one that can take over games and score goals right alongside Johansson and Arvidsson. At the end of the day, I would probably agree with the two of you and say that Johansson and Duchesne, at the end of the day, have the most pressure on them to be the straws that stir the drink. But you can make a legitimate case for Forsberg having the most pressure on him.
His number is 27.27, by the way.
I feel good about my on-the-fly math. That was good.
That was very good. Yes, 27.
Blind squirrel finds an acorn every once in a while.
Here's the thing with Forsberg I think even last year, I think Forsberg, yeah, you're right. I mean, he's got to produce. He's got to score goals. I think he will, and he'll probably do it in bunches and streaks like he's always done, right? So even if Forsberg has a dry period to start the season or during the season or whatever, like, I don't expect him to necessarily press that's kind of how he does it. Now, if it goes too long, then obviously that's a problem. But I don't know. I just feel like Forsberg was a lot less of a problem, frankly, last year, than the other two guys. And I just think he's so good that he will produce.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think he was much less of an issue than Johansson and Duchesne was. I still think that at some point, if you're Forsberg, you've also got to force the issue a little bit more. Like, you've got to have that mindset of just taking over the game. And I think sometimes when you see him do that, it works. That guy is borderline unstoppable when he's using that combination of power and skill. I'd like to see that a little bit more, that mentality.
Yeah, and Arvidsson, he's the guy who probably gets more of a pass, because of injuries. But there's also a lot of pressure on him to stay healthy, and get back to what he was doing. I mean, again, I thought he also – Johansson looked like a different guy, but I thought Arvidsson with the break and everything looked like a different guy also in the postseason. Looked like he had another gear, and the Preds desperately need him to have that this year and be on the ice.
Coming up next is the way that the NHL has shuffled around the divisions. Does that actually help the Predators this season? We'll discuss that when we come back. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Talking Preds and looking ahead to training camp, which starts here in just a few days for the Nashville Predators. And obviously things are going to look a little bit different this year in the NHL, a 56-game regular season. And they have moved the divisions around, more of a geographical thing, trying to limit the travel, more of a baseball-style schedule where you're playing teams multiple times in a row, which I think is going to be really interesting on the ice to see how that affects the hostility level in these games. But the Central Division looking a little different this year. The Predators still in the Central. They get the defending Stanley Cup champion Tampa Bay Lightning in their division now. Carolina comes over. Chicago's still there. Columbus back in the Central Division to reignite an old rivalry. Dallas now in the division. The Detroit Red Wings back in the division. And the Florida Panthers as well. So no Colorado, no St. Louis, and no Minnesota right now in the division.
Or Winnipeg.
They're in the All-Canadian division. Does that help or hurt the Predators' chances, in your opinion, to make the playoffs this year? Joe, we'll start with you. Is this good news for the Predators, bad news about this divisional realignment? Where do you stand on that?
I think it's good news. I think it should be a little bit of a boost, you know, just because there's some teams starting with the mighty Detroit Red Wings, that should help you to play them that often, although it has been weird with the Preds and the Red Wings over the years. I think it's also, obviously very excited about hockey here in a couple weeks, but, you think about it, it's like, man, don't get to watch them play Colorado at all, right, or St. Louis at all, or Pittsburgh, any of those Eastern, some of those Eastern teams that you enjoy, a couple of those a year. No Lavi. But it makes sense. The way they've done this, obviously, I think it's a sensible way to go about it. But as far as does it help them? Yeah, I think it does. I think it's not the toughest of the four divisions.
No, I don't think so either.
Even with Tampa Bay.
That's the thing. I think some people look at it as you're getting Tampa Bay, who was just an absolute machine last year in your division. And I get it. They're going to be really good again. I don't know if they're going to be quite as good as they were last year, but they'll be really good again. Carolina, I think, is really good, really fast, a young team there. But you look around, Detroit, they shouldn't be very good at all. Chicago just got some brutal news the last few days. Kirby Dach, their number two center, is going to be out for 4 to 5 months after going through wrist surgery. And now Jonathan Toews apparently has some sort of medical condition where he's just lethargic and tired all the time. They haven't really been able to get to the bottom of that. So who knows how long Chicago or how long Toews will be out. With those two guys in the fold, I didn't think Chicago was going to be all that good. Now with those two guys out for the foreseeable future, it's basically, hey, Patrick Kane. That's about it. There's not much with Chicago right now. So you don't feel like they're much of a threat. So, Florida, very average to me. So, you've got Dallas. They're good. Tampa's good. Carolina's good. And I think Columbus and Nashville are kind of right there together. It's going to be really interesting.
I do think this division is maybe a little bit more up for grabs than what it looks like on paper. Because you mentioned Tampa Bay, but Dallas was in the Stanley Cup final against Tampa Bay. Yeah. But both of those teams suffered a lot of injuries. Nikita Kucherov, one of the best players in the league, out for the season. Dallas has a handful of injuries that they're dealing with. Ben Bishop and Tyler Seguin will miss the start of the season for them.
Corey Perry's gone.
Well, yeah, that makes all the difference in the world. Ryan Ellis can at least stay upright for most of the season. So,
imagine if they saw him this often. Seriously.
Oof. The hatred.
It would be really bad.
The hatred from Preds fans would be through the roof. But you know, Carolina's very talented, but they also have goaltending issues. So I'm not saying the Preds are going to win the Central, but I do think it's going to be a lot more competitive than what it might look like on paper.
Yeah, it is going to be interesting, just the repetitive nature of the schedule and what does that do? What does that mean? We know it's going to mean these guys are going to get sick of each other, but what does it mean competitively?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. We heard Poile talk about that a little bit yesterday, just in terms of making sure you have the flexibility in your lineup, making sure you have the depth. And he did talk about, you know, going up against some of these teams multiple times in a row. I mean, the hostility is going to be there. I think the physicality is going to be interesting to see this year. I think the Predators, obviously, with their lineup, probably more equipped to handle games like that this year than they have been in the past couple of years. But it's also interesting from a lineup standpoint of, you know, we were talking in the last segment about the top four forwards, and we've talked about the second line all offseason long. What are you going to do there? Would it be smarter to split up that top line and maybe move Forsberg down with Duchesne and, you know, keep Arvidsson and Johansson together up top? And I look at some of the moves they've made since then, bringing Granlund back into the fold. And with him back in, like, I almost wonder if it's a foregone conclusion at this point that they're just going to start with Forsberg, Johansson, and Arvidsson. They're not even going to entertain the thought of breaking those guys up. That's probably the way I would handle it anyway. But with Granlund coming back in, I'm not sure I see any chance that they start with Forsberg on a line with Duchesne. I think they're going to roll with that top line and see if they can pick up where they left off last year in the bubble.
I mean, if you're Duchesne, like, are you actively campaigning for Forsberg?
I would be.
You know? Right. You know, and that looked really good to start last year. But, yeah, but I think you're right, and I think that's the way to go. I mean, it was interesting the way Poile sort of broke it down yesterday. You know, to me, it made it pretty clear that he'd like to see that top line be together. He said, you know, to paraphrase, like, the top line, if they do what they want to do, that trickles down to the second line, that trickles down to the third line. You know, that's an interesting way to put it. Obviously, like you said, there's a case to be made, like, hey, let's have some more balance and, you know, try to have both be strong. And certainly that was a lot of what the Preds and Laviolette last year was trying to do. But I think you've got to, the way those guys played, it's just like, if you have a line that good and you're talking about it, I still think one of the top handfuls of lines in the league when they're playing their best, I think you have, especially with the way the rest of the roster is constructed, I think you have to do it.
Yeah, I mean, that's just going to put a lot of pressure on Granlund and Duchesne to figure it out. I mean, you talked about kind of the start that Forsberg had with Duchesne last year. Well, the other guy on that line was Granlund. I mean, they looked great together the first few games. Forsberg gets hurt, and they never really, like, stuck with it after that. There was so much moving around and so much shuffling. They went back to that line a few times, but never long enough, I think, to really get a gauge of what it was. So if it's going to be Duchesne and Granlund and then whoever else on the other side, there's a lot of pressure on those two to get it figured out. To me, like, I look at the skill set of those two players, there's no reason they shouldn't be able to play well together. I mean, I think their games complement each other pretty well, especially, you know, the version of Granlund that we saw after the coaching change last year when Hines came in. I think that guy, how aggressive he was, complements Matt Duchesne really well. But what you can't have is, you know, Granlund and Duchesne taking 6 weeks to try and get things figured out, because you're going to dig yourself in way too much of a hole at that point.
This is the depth chart that you're talking about, kind of the lines and the juggling of the lines. This is where the loss of Kyle Turris is actually going to be a gain.
Yeah.
Where you don't have this, for lack of a better term, dead weight that you're trying to find a spot for on the depth chart or in your lines that has a domino effect on everybody else.
Well, I felt like they were forcing him in there last
exactly.
year. And look, it wasn't Kyle Turris's fault. Like, it's just, that's what happens when you go out and get 1,500 centers. Somebody, I mean, you've got to have somebody playing wing that's not accustomed to playing wing. We saw Duchesne do it a couple times last year. My guess is, based on the forwards that they've signed and, I guess, the versatility, I would say, that they have, I don't think there's any chance Duchesne's playing wing this year. I mean, I think they're going to ride him out at center, which could be, maybe that's a net gain in the long run.
And it was Turris's fault for not being, you know, better and yes. making it easier on everyone. But yeah, that's a good point. It's a little bit more clear about where everybody fits this year. So maybe that will help. And I do think with Granlund, I mean, I think there was a massive difference, and there was a difference for tourists too, but with Granlund under Hines, so for it to come all the way back around, that's, you know, that may end up being an awfully nice break for the Preds, you know, to get him back.
So now I'm just a few days away from Nashville Predators training camp, and hard to believe, just a couple of weeks away from the season beginning. So we'll continue to monitor what the lines look like once practice gets rolling here and training camp rolls around. When we come back, we'll dive into the Titans. Some more bad news on the kicking front yesterday. How concerned are we about how this could affect the game against the Texans? We'll discuss when we come back. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Got a loaded show for you today. Lots of Titans talk to get to. Mike Golic Jr. will join us at 8 o'clock to break down the college football playoff. And then Clint Sterner joins us at 9 o'clock from Sports Radio 610 in Houston. We'll look ahead to the game against the Texans coming up this weekend. But Joe, some more bad news for the Titans yesterday. We talked to open the show yesterday about Steven Goskowski, placed on the COVID-19 reserve list. And then yesterday, Brett Kern now placed on the list as well. So the Titans potentially without both their starting kicker and their starting punter in this game against Houston on Sunday. If that's the case, Joe, how concerned should Titans fans be about this game Sunday without two of their specialists being in the fold? We've seen how important those two guys can be at times this season. How concerned should Titans fans be about this?
Well, I will say this. The Titans should not be planning to punt a lot anyway.
That's true.
Okay. So I mean, honestly, to me, it's still the bigger deal is Goskowski. For as great as Brett Kern is, and certainly it's you know, it comes in handy to have him to be able to put a couple inside the 10. Whenever you need it. Wasn't able to do that, you know, the other night. Of course, he's probably not used to punting from the 30 either.
Yeah, not a whole lot of experience with that.
Yeah, but it's a loss, and it seems to add up to like this ominous situation where it's like, uh-oh, now they've lost their specialists, all this pressure's on them, you know, they're going to play this 4-11 team, and man, it looks like it's maybe lining up against him a little bit, but this offense should make the punter largely irrelevant, and it should also finish drives with touchdowns. You're still talking about the number one goal-to-go offense in the league, the number two red zone offense in the league. Score touchdowns and just leave it to extra points, and you'll be fine.
Simple enough, right? Just keep scoring touchdowns.
That's
right?
All you got to do.
Look, it's basically what they did last year. I mean, it's basically the last 6-7 games of last year. That's all they did was score touchdowns. So that's a good formula to follow in this game. And Houston's defense, I think, certainly leaves that on the table. It is interesting, though. I mean, we've seen already once this year how big of an impact not having Brett Kern out there could be with Trevor Daniel in the fold. Now, to Trevor Daniel's credit, he did come back after that and play fine. But I agree. Like, I don't think there should be a lot of punting going on Sunday for the Titans. I get it. We talked about J.J. Watt and his inspiring speech yesterday. I'm sure Houston will be ready to go. They'll be ready to play. Quite frankly, I just don't think they're good enough on defense. So if I'm the Titans, I'm not overly worried about this, but I do wonder, Joe, like if you're Mike Vrabel and this staff and you know what your specialist situation could be heading into this game, does that affect the way you call the game at all? Like, are you more apt to go for it on a fourth down than you otherwise would be, knowing what your kicking situation, both with field goals and with punting, could look like?
That's a good question. Maybe, and does that then, do you make more calls on third down that are like knowing you're going for it on fourth down? Like, for example, you know, third and five, you know, run the ball, and then you know you're going to go on fourth and two or whatever it might be. I mean, does that affect how you set things up? Maybe it does. I mean, you still got to have confidence. And like you said, hey, Trevor Daniel, I mean, he had an awful night against Indianapolis. You know, the block wasn't on him, but the shank was a big part of that just complete turnaround of that game for the Colts. And Vrabel took a lot of crap for, you know, for the fact that the Titans, you know, kept him, but he did respond. So you have to feel better about him now that he can at least go out there and, okay, well, it's fourth and five at the you know, at your own 45, you know, like to me, it's like, okay, he can still, you can count on him to like get it to the end zone or close to it and you know, have them and flip the field and be fine, you know? So, I mean, I think you're still okay. Obviously you have Brett Kern there. That's a weapon, and you feel even better about, look, you know, let's try to pin these guys. Now, also, it doesn't necessarily matter with the way the Titans defense is playing, whether you pin a team or not, you know, but
feels like you're just delaying the inevitable at that point.
Yeah. You're just giving them more plays that they'll run against you. But I don't know. I think that especially with this, you've at least got a guy who should have some more confidence to be able to go out there and perform, you know, place kicker. That's where, again, like, are you, you know, you're down two driving late or a tie game or whatever, you know, and normally you would just kind of set up and try to kill clock and set up for a field goal. Or is it like, you know what, got to score a touchdown, got to go for the touchdown. Who knows if this guy can, you know, can make a kick, let alone a pressure kick. That's still, to me, a much bigger deal.
So, Ryan Poyer, you know those people that have, like, arthritis in their knee and that they've been able to, like, claim that they can detect when the rain's coming, like they know when the weather's coming? That's basically been you this year with the Tennessee Titans. You've been able to kind of capture the spirit of the thing, the mood of this team. You were nervous as heck the first time the Colts game came around. You felt very confident against Baltimore. I kind of sense some nervous energy from you this week with the Houston game. Is that fair? Unfair? How do you feel about this game?
Yeah, there's some nervous energy.
Oh, boy.
There's a little bit of nervousness here. It feels a little bit like the Cincinnati game.
Oh, boy.
So the Cincinnati game, to me, going into it, how I was feeling was, all right, the Titans should win this game, but the Bengals are certainly capable of exposing the Titans and maybe shocking them a little bit, especially after the Titans had a dismal first half against the Steelers, a heartbreaking way to finish that game. It was billed as the top game of the week, and then you have to go face Cincinnati on the road. And there's a knot in my stomach this week about this game, because you can make a case, especially if the Bills sit their starters, that every other team in the AFC in this wild card or divisional picture are going to win. And if the Titans do not win this game Sunday, I just can't fathom what that feeling is going to be. Yeah. And look, the Titans' pass rush is putrid. It is awful.
It sucks.
They cannot breathe on a quarterback, to the point where Matt LaFleur is drawing up plays so that Aaron Rodgers can just sit there for 15 seconds and just slice and dice this Titans defense. And Deshaun Watson is certainly capable of doing that, no matter who his receivers are. And that scares me in this game.
Joe Rexroad, it's not a good thing when Ryan Poyer is nervous about a Titans game. That has not worked out well for the Titans this year.
Now, okay, but weren't you confident about the game last week? Am I remembering that wrong?
I was cautiously optimistic. I felt the Titans were going to come to play. I didn't know whether or not they were going to win, but I thought they were going to come to play.
Yeah, we never got a definite answer on Porth last week about the winning of the game.
No, I was holed up at home.
Yeah,
all last week.
Yeah,
Yeah, that's true. I'm not sure that Porth is the Punxsutawney Phil of the Titans, those two weeks definitely. You know, the Colts and Ravens, that was some good instinct. I agree with everything you said. I mean, it's just, the only thing about this week is the Dolphins. If you want to look up at other, you know, at other things that could, because obviously you got the Ravens, Colts, and Dolphins all have to win
right
for the Titans for a loss to matter. Now, of course, it would still matter in terms of, you know, not winning the division. I mean, I think the Ravens are rolling. I think they're going to beat the Bengals. The Colts are going to probably beat the Jags 100-0. But I still don't know. Like, are the Bills, they bringing everybody to the table here for this game? The Steelers aren't, you know, but are the Bills going to, are they all in on trying to win this, get the two? If that's the case, then I don't know that the Dolphins are going to win that game, even though the Dolphins still would have more incentive. I mean, the Bills are just playing so well right now. So that might still end up, you know, saving the Titans. But yeah, I mean, look, there's a lot of reason to worry about this game. And it's just, it's also psychology. Again, like last year, they go in against a team that knows it's in, and you know they're not playing their people. This year, those guys are just like, hey, this is our last chance to play. Let's have fun and let it rip. And against that defense, you got to feel like you can really let it rip.
Yeah, I mean, what does Romeo Crennel have to lose in this game? He's not coming back. I mean, it is a dangerous game for the Titans. I still feel good about their chances to come in there and win. But Ryan Porth, you do make me nervous. Every time I've gone against you this year, it hasn't ended well for me.
And it is the NFL.
That's true.
I get it on paper. The Titans should beat them by 2 touchdowns. But it's the NFL. Weird things happen, especially in Week 17. Over the years, we have seen some games, particularly when Cincinnati went to Baltimore a couple years ago and Andy Dalton upset the Ravens. And the Ravens, you just assumed those final few weeks they were going to be in the playoffs, and then poof, they weren't. That I don't know. Especially with this Gostkowski and Kern news this week.
Yeah.
There's a pit in my stomach.
Well, no one should feel great. I mean, look, when you talk about 2-touchdown win, but that's still like that involves at some point stopping the other team, right? Like, I feel great about the Titans offense in this game. But, I mean, I feel like stops in this game for the Titans defense, I mean, I almost feel like they're accidental at this point. I mean, not in every matchup, but in this particular matchup against that guy, you know, David Johnson's playing better. I mean, it's, you know, I haven't even seen what the line is on this game.
7.5.
Yep.
7.5. Okay.
Well, I wonder what the over-under is, because I'll just take and tell you going over.
56.5.
Well, I can tell you this. We talked yesterday about the confidence of the Titans defense. I can confirm to you that it's still there. There's still some confidence there. Aaron Rodgers went on McAfee's show yesterday and talked about Jeffrey Simmons and David Long talking trash to him. And apparently at some point in the fourth quarter, the Titans stopped the run, and Jeffrey Simmons looked at him and said, "You can't run on my side." Oh, and Rodgers looked up at the scoreboard and said, "We've run for 225 yards. Doesn't really matter what side we run on at this point." So good on Jeffrey Simmons. At least at that point in the game, the confidence still there for him defensively.
That's amazing. Talking trash at that point in the game when you're getting blown out. I mean, I guess you got to tip the cap.
Yeah.
And then also, so David Long called him a name.
Yeah, he didn't.
He
didn't
disclose. He wouldn't specify, but apparently it wasn't like very good. He said it just wasn't very good trash talk.
Yeah. So, look, I mean, the Titans, we've talked about the confidence. They're still confident enough to run their mouth and be talking trash at the end of the game. So, at least you know that part of it's still there, Joe.
Well, Simmons, and that's funny, too, because, you know, like Rodgers was saying, you know, his teammate blocks for him. So he said something like, yeah, we knew that he'd be talking the whole game. So, I mean, Simmons is he's a talker out there. He just – here's a week where the Titans could use a little bit more backup of that talk, you know?
Yeah.
Couple big plays, a sack of Watson, something, you know, cause a turnover. I mean, you know, you got a few people on defense who have been good players this year. You know, Butler's another one of them. Man, you need those guys to find some plays here.
So speaking of the AFC playoff picture and some help that the Titans could need on Sunday, there's one team that looks like everything's going to work out for them on Sunday, which makes me think it's tailor-made for them to screw it up. That's coming up on the other side. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And obviously a big weekend coming up in the AFC playoff picture. But, Joe Rexroad, there's one team that's been whining for a long time now about the schedule, and they've had to play too many games in a row, and there's just so much going on out there with the Pittsburgh Steelers. And
the NFL's
just
out to get us.
The NFL's out to get us. It's just been really insufferable to watch the Pittsburgh Steelers. And quite frankly, Joe, they've become so unlikable through this process. I like Mike Tomlin. That's about pretty much it. I mean, with the Pittsburgh Steelers. But Mason Rudolph going to be starting at quarterback this weekend against the Cleveland Browns, which is going to be a storyline in itself. By the way, Joe, if they win that game, are you prepared to do 4 hours on Monday on Mason Rudolph and Myles Garrett? You ready for it?
Oh, man, I've been there.
Looking forward to it. That's going to be a heck of a situation. But like, you look at that game, Pittsburgh looks like they're phoning it in for the last part of this regular season, getting ready for the playoffs, trying to get rested up. And Cleveland needs to win this game. But doesn't this kind of feel like the exact situation that Cleveland screws up, like just based on the history of their franchise?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we talk about like the kickers with the Titans, the specialists, and you do. It's a little bit more of an ominous feeling, like, oh, made it a little bit tougher, now a little bit tougher here. I swear with the Browns, it's very much like the Lions for me. If something looks like it's going to be easier, then you actually feel worse about that team's chances. So, yeah, like the Browns, it's like anything where someone would say, oh, Browns, all right. Like I saw our buddy Chris Martel tweet as soon as this happened, he's like, yes, or something like that on Twitter. Like, I'm like, yeah, ease up, buddy.
Yeah, ease just calm it down, man.
So, I mean, look, also just like whenever the Browns see like the Steelers helmets or something, they curl up in a ball, you know, like,
or take their own helmets off. I mean, that happens too.
Or that, you know? So, I mean, I absolutely can see him blowing it. And yes, the Steelers. So here's the thing with the Steelers whining. So like the other day, I mean, again, it's just amazing. It was Tracy Wolfson. I mean, it's just amazing. Like the way it was phrased, like, you know, the Steelers, you know, don't want to talk about this, but they admitted that this has been very tough on them. Like, oh my God. Yeah. They admitted it.
Yeah,
they finally go public with their concerns about what happened to their schedule. I will ask though, because Eric Ebron is so the guy who's out there, like, how many other members of the Steelers team have been that outspoken about it? I honestly don't know. And I automatically already haven't liked Ben Roethlisberger for a long time.
But right.
I don't know. Is it widespread? I mean,
it's
I really
not
don't
that
know
widespread.
That.
Like, I remember Roethlisberger, I think it was after the Ravens game where they got schedule messed around. He's like, well, we got about a day and a half to get ready for the next game. So just deal with it, man.
Or doubleheader or whatever.
Doubleheader coming up. So, yeah, I mean, it's not just Ebron, although he is by far the most annoying one about it.
Claypool,
yeah,
on Twitter. Juju on Twitter. Juju just needs to stay off
social
media. He's
got to get off social media, man.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that they – I mean, I think it's probably the right choice just because does it really mean that much if you get to, you know, the divisional round – does it really mean that much to be at home versus like in Buffalo if that's what the matchup is?
Probably not.
I mean, it probably means more to be as rested as possible for that first game.
Well, that's why I'm really interested to see what Buffalo does too. Like, are they going to try to get and maintain the 2 seed? Are they going to play their starters? And if so, like, what does that mean for Miami? Because if you're the Titans, I mean, you're sitting here just hoping that Buffalo plays their starters and they knock off the Dolphins. That way, that you're getting some help on the outside as well. Because I agree, Porth, like if they don't and Buffalo sits down Josh Allen for this game and they sit down some starters on defense, I mean, that puts a ton of pressure on the Titans to win this game in Houston. Not that there shouldn't be anyway, but it puts even more pressure on it.
I mean, look, so even if Buffalo sits like half their starters, let's say they take a kind of a hybrid approach to it where they sit Diggs and a couple other star players, Trey White.
Yeah.
But they have Ed Oliver still in there and a couple other good players. I don't think Miami offensively is good enough to just blow them away.
Right.
Especially since they're sticking with Tua. So I do think that is still going to be a hard game for Miami to convincingly win unless Buffalo just completely treats it like a preseason game.
Yeah.
I mean, Buffalo, it's Buffalo by a point right now. That tells me Vegas thinks they're not playing their people, right?
Yeah. I mean, you would think the line would be more than that. Although, I mean, Miami's defense, it's pretty good. It's like the number one scoring defense in the league right now.
Also, I would want to know when the last time the Dolphins went into Buffalo in January and won.
Yeah, that's a good question. That is a good
one. Well, the Bills were garbage not that long ago. Not that the Dolphins were that much better. But, yeah, it's it's an interesting, you know, situation for the Titans too, because I mean, the other game that matters is Colts Jags. Just chalk that up, like the Colts are going to win.
Hey, man, the Jags have the number one pick locked up. They're freed up to win if they want to.
That's true. That is true. You can go for the season sweep.
Yeah.
Which is amazing. But you're going to know, or I don't know, will you know? I mean, you can know if you're the Titans what happens with the other two teams, with the Ravens, Bengals, Dolphins, Bills are both early games. So, you know, if there's a scoreboard, you know, up on the board in Houston or someone's checking their phone, you know, by kickoff, they will know, because I think the Titans game kicks off at 25, right? Yes, it does. It kicks off at 3:25, you know, what the situation is. But again, like, yeah, I mean, I know if you're Mike Vrabel and probably anybody that built it right now, it's like, I mean, come on. Win this game. Who cares? You know? You don't deserve it if you don't.
Let's go to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Ben text in talking about the Steelers and says, the league isn't out to get them, but the league did handle some things wrong with their schedule. If I was the Titans, I would have been upset if it was them. It's a free country to complain. You can't complain.
Oh, we know this.
Yeah, so, yeah. There's a lot of complaining going on.
So I've got a real good buddy of mine, Vince Ellis, Alabama grad, monster Steelers fan. He covered the Detroit Pistons for a long time for the Detroit Free Press. He actually works for the Pistons. He and I got into a Twitter beef the other day, and it was interesting because
Joe Rex wrote in a Twitter beef, man.
I know. Isn't that amazing? It's hard to believe, right? Now, this was a friendly one. I mean, he's a good friend of mine, but, you know, he at one point, because I made fun of the whole thing, like, oh, thank you, Steelers, for being courageous or admitting that this has hurt you, you know? And so he's like, we go back and forth. And at one point he said, well, you know, why shouldn't they be upset when the Titans were out wilding, you know, talking about the week, of course, where, you know, they went and had workouts and all this stuff. And it's just, and I'm like, I went back, I'm like, look, man, I'm not saying that, I mean, they still should have known not to do the workouts. I totally agree. But I mean, are we still going to exaggerate what the Titans did at this point? I mean, at that point, we had people saying they should like be banned from the NFL until 2030. You know, and it's interesting that there's still that perception out there, even though we have now seen other teams, I think, have worse situations, and we've certainly seen stricter punishments for the Raiders. At least, I was actually surprised the Ravens didn't get more than they got.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's still that perception that the Titans, you know, like it was some sort of like subversive plot to violate the protocols, you know?
Tell the Steelers just to get over it. Steelers and their fans, just get over it. Just play.
Yeah.
Now you've got your bye week or your stupid idle week, as Rex Road calls it, this week. It's basically what you're treating it as. So the excuses to me now, they're out the door. You've got a week 17 bye. At this point, essentially, is what you're doing. I don't want to hear anything about it from Steelers fans if they get beat in the first round of the playoffs about the schedule and the way it played out. Give me a break.
Yeah, it's enough. And you know what? They should just enjoy this week, because Mason Rudolph's going to beat the Browns, and the Browns are going to get knocked out of the playoffs, and then they'll all laugh, and everyone will be happy again, except for Chris Martel.
That's right. When we come back, we're going to rank the AFC playoff contenders that are in the playoff picture right now. Where does the Titans fall on the list for me and Joe Rexroad? We'll discuss when we come back. This is Robbie and Rexroad live from the Wholesale Link Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.